You're listening to The Writer's Voice on Virginia Voice, and I'm Jennifer Robbins, your host. Our guest is local author Mary Foley. Mary is the author of three books, featured blogger on WorkingMother.com, and creator of the video program Keys to Being a Confident, Courageous, Career-Savvy Woman. When she's not writing or creating videos, she's presenting and facilitating live programs or being a personal career mentor. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Today we are talking about Bodacious Woman, Outrageously in Charge of Your Life and Loving It. This book was so great, Mary. I feel so inspired to live a more bodacious life, and I really am loving it. So,
well, that's the whole point. I mean, that's the whole point of writing for me. That's the whole point of speaking, and I love that. And I hope that by the time we're done, that there's a few more listeners who go, I got to find out more what it means to be bodacious too.
Absolutely. So how does an 8-hour customer service rep become the head of corporate training for a small company back in the 90s known as AOL? Is that how you became bodacious, Mary?
That was definitely a training ground, okay? So a lot of people say to me, Mary, how is it that you went from an $8 an hour customer service rep at AOL and then you were the head of corporate training? I mean, you know what? And I say, listen, I want you to know I had a detailed step-by-step plan that I executed without flaw. And if you believe that, I'm really only 25 years old and I used to be a blonde. And of course, you're looking at me, I'm not 25 and I am so not a blonde. The reality is that I graduated from Virginia Tech, woohoo, go Hokies, in engineering school at 23 years old. The only thing I really knew then was I did not want to be an engineer. And like so many college grads, what do I want to do with my life? Well, I decided, since I don't know really the profession, let me move from my small hometown of Williamsburg, Virginia, to what I considered the big city. And I moved to metropolitan D.C. area, Washington, D.C. And I just was trying to find a job, any job to pay the bills. And I saw an ad, amongst others, that I responded to in the Washington Post, because we didn't have Monster.com then or Career Builder. And one of them was for the small little unknown computer company to help them get their customers online. I thought, well, whatever that means, you know, because it was 1988, who knew what online meant then. But I had worked with computers when I was in college, and I went, okay, I know it has to do with computers. I interviewed for the job. I got it. And yes, it was for $8 an hour. I was helping customers do just that, get online, get connected to this new thing that we called, it wasn't even called America Online then. They had some other services prior to America Online. Same concept. I thought I'd stay there 3 months. I stayed 10 and a half years. And it was the most wild ride in some ways because it was challenging and it was exciting and it was demanding in terms of pressures and time schedules and all of those kind of things. But I loved that environment because it was exciting. And I had the opportunity to continue to grow my career and went from an $8 an hour customer service rep to then a trainer, then a head of training for the call center, then ran the call center as a manager. And then as the company grew, we needed someone in corporate training, which was now in human resources. And I decided to take my management skills as well as my training skills, help to grow the company that way. So that's how that worked. You know, that's why I look back and I go, wow, that sounds so simple. You know, at the time I had no clue. I mean, let's be honest. I kept asking myself, do I like where I work? Do I like the company, what it's about? Do I like my colleagues? Do I feel I'm getting paid fairly? And then the actual, you know, position that I was doing, did it feel like I was contributing? Was it challenging? If I could say yes, yes, yes to all those things, I would continue to stay there. When one of those started to change, particularly I kind of mastered role and I really wanted another challenge, then I started looking around the company more. And truly, to me, a big part of being bodacious is saying, what do I want now in my life and now in my career, now in my relationships? And being willing to have the courage to ask yourself and then answer that and then say, okay, now what's the first step towards that? Because if we don't make that first step, it's not anyone else's responsibility to. We may get help easily and ask for it and people encourage us, but we're really the one in charge of our lives and hopefully loving it.
I really enjoyed learning about the history of the word bodacious. I mean, let's yes. face it, it's a great word, bodacious.
It's fun.
Can you share with our listeners a little bit of the history behind that word?
Sure, sure. You know, I like to say you can say it fast or you can say it slow. You can say bodacious or bodacious, but you cannot say it without cracking a smile on your face and the other person.
I think that's true.
It's just a fun word to say, and it's a fun word to hear. It's not completely for sure what is, you know, the definitive origin, but there are a couple of ideas in my research to find that out. One belief is that it's the combination of the words bold and audacious, and that it started as a term in the southern United States in the 1800s. And you can really imagine that. I mean, that's not a stretch, you know, having living here in the southeastern
sure.
part of the United States, here in Virginia. The other, though, aspect that I found that was so not anticipated, I learned about Queen Boudicca. Also, Boudicca, but it's Boudicca. There's a couple different spellings, but it's very close to bodacious. And I had to find out more about this queen, Celtic queen around the time of Nero, okay, who was the Roman Empire. So at that time, there were Celtic tribes in what we now call England. So she and her husband, whose name was King Prageatascus, I think that's a name. I'm sorry, King, if I got that wrong. But those two had a tribe outside basically what we call London today. And there was London, but it was not as big as it is today. Anyway, the Romans were really in charge. When the king died, the typical thing that the Romans did is they wanted to take all the land and all the possessions of that tribe. Well, the queen was not happy about this. And so when they came out to do that and take all her possessions and really take over her tribe, she resisted. But the Romans didn't like that. And they actually beat her and raped her two daughters.
But gosh, that's horrible.
It's brutal. It's brutal. Well, the Romans weren't known to be kind. You know, they're warriors and they're going to be conquerors and then that's it. But here's the thing that's different. She got so angry at this that she decided that she was going to wage a war against the Romans, which at the time they were the biggest, most dominant, powerful people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
To wage a war, you're one tribe, right? But she did. She rallied up her tribe and she actually went into battle bare-breasted, which made me think, maybe that's the other connotation of bodacious. But anyway, she was thought to be a myth until the early 1900s. And archaeologists were digging and doing some other, you know, archaeology work in London as well as the town of Colchester. There was a legend that, though she did not beat the Roman army, she killed a whole lot of them and put up such a fight that, in the process, it burned London to the ground. Then in the early 1900s, archaeologists found that, no, as they dug deeper, there was this layer of ash that when they dated it was the same time as the legend. And so, and they found the same in the city of Colchester. And the amazing thing is today, if you go to London, across from Parliament, there is a bronze statue of the Queen. And she's actually on chariots, which doesn't make any sense because she probably was on horses, but let's split the hairs, on the River Thames. And she is taught in the British school system as a symbol of British freedom.
That is so neat. So when I go to England,
yeah.
I'm gonna look for
you
that.
You should. I actually went to London and England just this past August, and I said, that's the one thing. I want to go see the statue. And I went there. It's very busy. It's actually right at a subway, or of course, they don't call it a subway stop.
Sure.
They call it the underground. And took pictures with me and the Queen. Anyway, the thing about her that I loved was it was about leading her life and leading by principle and fighting for what was important to she and her whole family and her whole way of life. And that kind of gutsiness is what I think every woman can have inside of her.
I really like that. That's so inspirational. Women need to be more gutsy out there. I really believe that there's women out there that can relate to you hitting the glass ceiling at AOL.
Right.
So do you have any advice for those women that are in a situation right now where they feel like they are hitting
right.
the glass ceiling?
Yeah. Well, I didn't think I was going to hit it because I was in this company that I had 5 promotions in 10 years. And it wasn't just about the promotion. It was their belief in me to do that next step and to produce. And I was on that. I was doing that. And then, boom, it was like all of a sudden, this one particular manager did not have that same belief in me. And here's what I did. I was surprised, but in some ways I should have just had my eyes open a little bit better. If you're experiencing that, understand the landscape around you. I mean, why is this really happening? You know, for me, it was, what is it about my boss? It happened to be a man. It could have been a woman too, but what is it about his belief system? What is his, in terms of, does he think women can aspire to do more? Is he comfortable with women around him closer? You know, because seeking a promotion whereby I would be, you know, working with him more closely. What was it? You know, I thought to myself, I was in human resources, but I had an engineering degree. I did not have HR credentials per se. Was that an issue for him? You know, what was it, because he did not like overall, he wanted yes men, yes women around him versus, hey, how about this idea instead, right? And or did you just want someone to always go along with the program? Understand who the other person is and understand yourself. I realized what one of the things I wish I had done better looking back, huge lesson learned, apply it to today, is I didn't do a good enough job at showing proactively through my communication, both verbal and nonverbal, what I was doing on an everyday and a weekly basis that contributed specifically to the goals of the department and that he was responsible for. In other words, what's in it for him in a way that is authentic to what I was actually contributing. And so I did my own kind of step back. What's really happening here? What's the diagnosis? Could I go back and change what I, you know, showing off my contributions? No, I can't do anything about the past. I can only do that in the future. So I could modify my behavior. Would he really modify his, or would he perhaps see me differently? I pursued and had a couple conversations with him to try and figure that out. And I came to the conclusion this wasn't going to happen. So then it was, do I stay here and kind of under the thumb? That's how it felt, him limiting my career. Or do I look elsewhere? And that's ultimately so I decided I have to look elsewhere. I looked inside the company. And by the way, I had a few very, very interested other parties. So I could have stayed with AOL and gone over or even up and over. I had to say, well, what do I want the most for my career? If I really wanted to do the next step in my career where I was at, I'd have to leave the company. And ultimately, that was then the decision that I made. And that led to me going to grad school to go in that profession direction that I wanted to. But you see, I kind of broke it down in analysis. And we can influence other people's behavior, but we can't control it. We can something about ours. So it's, I think this is where engineering school helped. It's break it down and understand what's really happening. What can I do? What can I only influence? If I want to influence in a particular way and I can't get the outcome, then okay, it's still back to me. What can I do? Well, guess what? Essentially, when we're in companies and we're working as an employee, we're volunteers. We can leave. Now, I know that for some people, they go, oh, but I got insurance and, oh, I've got the responsibilities. I'm not saying just willy-nilly leave. But ultimately, you can take your skills and your abilities and go and volunteer it to someone else for pay. But you have to just make that decision.
When women live bodaciously, you say they have BOMO moments?
Mm-hmm.
What are BOMOs?
BOMOs. It's a little term that I coined, okay? Bodacious moments, you know, so BOMO. And it's the idea that we have moments, I think, if we pay attention to them, small, medium, and large moments, during our days, during our weeks. It's a moment when you know that you've had in that moment the courage to be bold, to take a risk, when you stand up for yourself. And you could have a BOMO and no one else realizes it, because they don't realize perhaps in that moment, let's say you walk into a group, a networking meeting, or a situation where you hardly know anybody, right? And that's oftentimes very uncomfortable for a lot of women, a lot of people.
I mean, I go into situations like that all the time.
All the time. Yeah. It's very common. So I used to be a shy little girl. No one believes me to this day, but, you know, I have to go back to get other people to evidence, like my parents. So how did I get over that? Well, anyway, so a BOMO could be, I walk into a situation that I'm uncomfortable and I decide I'm going to be the first one to make the first move to introduce myself. That could be a BOMO.
That's good.
Yeah. That could, for you, it could be large. For someone else, it could be, no big deal. That's small. Okay. I had a BOMO the other day. As you approach getting 50 years old, your body doesn't respond in the same way that it used to. And you get bummed about that. And so I've been very much athletic and kind of involved with activities like that my entire life. But, you know, I had some injuries and I got out of shape and all that stuff. And it was the first time in my life when I was doubting my ability that I could physically just keep up. I'd looked into this, one of these outdoor fitness groups, you know, that you meet in the morning.
Oh, yeah,
it's
I've heard
like
of
a
those.
Boot camp
yeah,
kind
they're
of.
All over the place, right?
So I talked to the woman beforehand about it and such. She says, why don't you come out and just give it a try? So that morning, I went and I thought, this is a BOMO for me. Because what if I fail? And then I thought, no, failure is I never give it a shot. But I still wanted to do well. Now, so I said, I'm not going to make this about any competition if I can keep up with the rest of the group. I don't even know. I'm in my mind, they're all like, you know, top fitness, you know, people and such. But I just know my biggest challenge was to myself that I showed up and that I made it through the hour in one way, shape, or form. And to me, that was a BOMO. And not any one of those women, it happened to be a group of women, knew that was a BOMO for me that day. But
that's
it was.
That's awesome. I'm going to start using BOMO moments.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's great. So you referenced in your book quite often that being the good girl is not good enough today.
Yeah,
and we all know that this is a tough world out there. And what do you mean by that, being the good girl is not good enough today?
Why I say being a good girl isn't good enough is because of my own personal experience where, and I think a lot of other women I've talked to can relate to this. So most of us have been raised to be good girls. You know, hey, you know, be a good girl, you know, be kind to others, be friendly, be personable. I think those are great qualities. I still aspire to those today and I value those today. The thing is that what adds into that good girl message, at least for me, it was don't focus on yourself. That's not very becoming. That's not very attractive. You know, don't make loud noises and be obnoxious, for example. You were so nice. It was such an emphasis on nice and kind. I had no radar in my early 20s for dysfunctional behavior, for people that were really not looking out for my best interest, just theirs. And unfortunately, it hit me, and how I learned this lesson was because at 25 years old, I thought I married the man of my dreams, and instead, he was the leading role in my nightmare. And I thought he was a good guy, and I thought he had all the qualities that I wanted as, and you know, in a partner. I didn't realize I had married, and this didn't happen during our dating, but after we were married, that he didn't control his anger well, and he was far more controlling of me, or trying to be, of my behavior, and that he was not only a emotional abuser, but he's a physical abuser.
Wow.
And I was in shock. And here's, as a good girl, I really tried to say, well, if I just love him more, if I'm just kinder to him more, if he just feels better about that, his behavior will change. Nah, didn't work. So being a good girl in that situation wasn't good enough. I realized as I looked at my work, in my career, which I had far more positive relationships, by the way, was not getting treated that way. But at the same time, I realized I had some people kind of in small ways taking advantage of my niceness. And sometimes I needed to say, no, sorry, can't do that for you. That's, you know, I'm thinking to myself, that's part of your job. And it was those things. So that's why it's not good enough to me for women today in the culture, not just the culture, but the pace of change that we live in. If you really are going to be responsible and in charge of your life and loving it, it's not about getting rid of the niceness or the friendliness. It's about adding some of that chutzpah in, okay? That's
right.
Basically how it is. So I thought, you know what? It's one part of the good girl being that respectful of others. It's the one part chutzpah, which of the, you know, the other kind of woman on the other extreme, which we didn't want to be, and we were told not, we were trained not to be as growing up, would run with the word rich, but it wasn't. It was the other B word, as I say. And so, you know, the chutzpah of that woman, but also a splash of spirited energy, that positive, decidedly positive, we're going to figure this out, things are going to be all right, and it's not denial of bad times or denial of negative feelings. It's going, all right, we'll deal with those negative feelings and those negative things, and then we're going to move on, and we're going to say there's a lot of goodness too in life. So to me, that's the mix.
I think that's awesome. I mean, attitude really is so important. You're listening to The Writer's Voice on Virginia Voice. I'm Jennifer Robbins, your host. Our guest today is local author Mary Foley, and the book is Bodacious Woman, Outrageously in Charge of Your Life and Loving It. I love in your book that you give an easy-to-remember framework for living bodaciously called the Bodacious Woman Mantra.
Yeah.
Explain what makes up your mantra.
I wanted to have some easy way to say, well, how do I, you know, continue to feel and act in a bodacious way? How do I really make that part of my behavior? Because if you know, the concept is great, but you being able to break it down into pieces. So to me, these are the four main kind of thrusts and behaviors of being a bodacious woman. I call it look within, think strategically, act bodaciously, kind of put that one in there, of course, and love every minute of it. And so here's kind of a quick overview of that. Look within is truly about listening to that inner voice, starting with you, okay? In other words, you start on the inside. It's an inside-out process as far as I'm concerned. What is that still small voice and that inner voice saying to you in a lot of situations? You know, we all hear, listen to your gut. It's the same kind of thing. But here's what happens so much with women is what I found. And I found in myself. We get so busy in our days, so much focus on, these are the things I got to get done for my job. These are the things I get it done for my family. These are the things that I said I would do on a volunteer basis. And it's all the to-do list. And let's face it, they're still important to do the to-do list. But we can get so absorbed in that, so focused on that, our brain never says, well, what about, not just what about me, but what do I think about in this situation? So it's staying in touch with yourself is really what that look within. And asking yourself more often than not, what do I think? How do I feel? What do I want? That leads to thinking strategically. I think as women in particular, we are not necessarily trained to think in terms of the in strategically, which is a lot about the big picture. And it's a lot about where I'm going in the direction of my life or the direction of even a project, okay, as well in our careers. And so one of the biggest aspects I always recommend about how to start thinking strategically is ask yourself more often than you probably are right now, what do I want? What do I want for my career? What do I want for my relationships? What do I want for the way, you know, our house looks? What do I want for dinner? I mean, seriously, what do I want in small, medium, and large ways? Unfortunately, I meet a lot of women who go, well, you know, that feels uncomfortable to ask. What do I want? Seems selfish. Mm-hmm. You know, it just seems like it's all about me. And my response to that is that it's responsible. Only you can really determine and answer the question, what do I want? And the reality is, and I found this in the early stages of my marriage, and then also in my career, I was susceptible to this. If I don't proactively answer that question, there'll always be someone else who will fill in that answer for me. And you know what? I've just in that moment given away my power, and I may not like ultimately the answer that they give.
Wow, that's a really good point.
Yeah. So we do it in little ways. We don't think about it. But then in bigger ways, it's more so. But so then the last two pieces are to act bodaciously. At some point when you say, what do I want? You got to, you know, now you got to make it public. You got to go from
right.
What's inside your head or in what's speaking to your heart to say, making an action, making a move. And that takes some risk. And I think this is where oftentimes as women we hesitate and we're not comfortable with risk. It helped me greatly to redefine failure. What was truly failure? Instead of it being a crash and burn experience and, oh my gosh, it's going to be horrible and it's just never. Instead, failure, I've defined as, is simply not trying, not giving something a shot, not taking at least one move or one step in the direction that is important to me. And so it doesn't mean it's a reckless risk. It doesn't mean it's not without some thought, but you still have to take a risk. And I often say, what's the worst thing that could happen in the situation? And I make myself kind of go there. And how would that feel? And then I'd say, what would I do? And, you know, and then here's the thing. Dial it back and go, now what's the probability of the worst thing happening? It's often not very high. We just make it this extreme. But because I asked myself also, now what would I do if it went to the extreme? And I literally made myself come up with my next plan or the response I would have to that person if I had to have a difficult conversation. And so I'd go, I could handle that. It may not be fun. It's not going to be comfortable, but could I handle it? Yeah, I can handle it. Okay, so dial it back. It's probably not going to get that severe. Let me take that first step. And then because the last part of the mantra is to love every minute of it, because we both know life has ebbs and flows. It has ups and downs. That's the natural course of life. So because even when you ask yourself, what do you want? And you take some steps towards it. It's not necessarily going to go as planned, or it might have a slightly different twist or turn. I just think having the overall perspective going in, this is not about perfection. This is about embracing each moment and deciding up front, I'm going to love every minute of it, because it is satisfying and thrilling that even if something doesn't turn out exactly as you'd hoped even, that you had the guts, you had the positive gutsiness, the bodaciousness to do it. And it's very empowering. And you can use even that power and that sense of satisfaction to go, all right, I'll pick myself up. Let's go at this a different way, or let's cross that off the list and we'll try something else. It's really, I think, helpful. It keeps a happier perspective about life and happier, you know, people. A lot of studies are out now about happiness. Do things for our physical health, our mental health, our longevity. I mean, we only have one shot, as we know, thus far on this planet, from the time we show up to the time we leave. Why not have more happier moments, more positive moments that we can create for ourselves than not?
You're so inspiring. It's great. Everybody needs to read Bodacious Woman, Outrageously in Charge of Your Life and Loving
It. Well, imagine more bodacious women and the bodacious men that they're involved with and the women in their lives, just more bodacious people, period. How much different our lives would be.
I mean, it's just great stuff. Everybody needs to read this book, Bodacious Woman. So you did talk about 6 steps for taking a stand in your book,
right,
which I thought was very interesting. So could you just tell us briefly,
sure,
those six steps for taking a stand,
yeah,
in your life?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is taking the Bodacious Woman mantra that we just shared and really kind of putting in a step-by-step process, okay? So taking a stand is the idea of, that's like a big BOMO, right, when you decide
exactly. You're
going to take a stand, okay? And, you know, this can apply whether it's in a work situation or, frankly, in usually a relationship kind of situation. So first thing is trust your inner voice, that something is not right. Instead of rationalizing it, oh, it's going to get better, or just, oh, they didn't really mean that. No, you know, if it keeps coming up, trust your inner voice. She is trying to tell you something. The second thing is see the situation for what it really is. This is where it's put the rose-colored glasses, or I wish were different glasses, off and say, what is really the situation? And once you've accepted a problem exists, okay, it really helps. Or some, if whether it's a problem or something's not right here. And what you really need to do is just to kind of, and sometimes I do this. I go, what are the facts? What are the knowns in this situation? And I write them out. I start to make a list.
That's good
advice.
So
I start to just kind of like, okay, I use my head, all right, to do that. And then the third is decide what you want. You do have to say in this situation, not what do I hope will happen because it looks like it might. What do I really want to have in this situation? Only you, as we said before, can make that decision. And, you know, so when you stand up for yourself and you take a stand, you have to expect some pushback. You have to expect people are not going to always like that. So the fourth step is decide how you're going to interact with this person. Because when you're taking a stand, it's usually going to have an interaction with one or more people. I don't care if it starts an email or not. There's going to be an interaction in some way. So think ahead. When you say, this is what I want, in some way, shape, or form, people are going to push back. So what is your first thing you're going to say? Expect pushback. What's the second thing you're going to say? Have 2 or 3 things ready to go. And that kind of gets you in the preparation mode. The fifth step is you got to do it. This is this idea of acting bodaciously. You've got to send that email. You got to make that phone call. You've got to have that conversation, whatever it is. And then when you do, the sixth step is you're going to have some pushback. So then respond. Okay, so to do it is make the first step, and, you know, I could say step 6, 5, and 6 are kind of similar, because it then is take the first step and then expect that you're going to need to take some more steps. Now, I didn't say in any of this, in 6 steps to taking a stand, that you're going to initially get what you want. Okay. But when you're in a situation where you're taking a stand, what it really is you're saying to yourself, I have to do this for myself. The situation is bothering me so much. I can't let it continue. So what you're essentially doing is you're saying, I'm not. I'm going to say something. I'm going to do something. I'm going to deliberately stir the pot because the pain of staying in the place, in this situation, is too great. Okay? So just know that your goal here is not to always just get the magic wand to be done or the magic wand to be cast, and so right. Things are going to be totally different. Everybody's going to be living in, kumbaya land. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you're going, it's just not going to stay the same. And there's going to be more about what I want in this situation. Or guess what? I won't be in this situation. Or I will totally so lessen my involvement.
This is such good stuff. I mean, I am feeling so inspired, and I really want to become a bodacious woman. So, Mary, just some quick words of advice or wisdom that you'd like to share with the other women out there that want to have more of a bodacious life. Do you have any advice you'd like to give those women? Because, I mean, let's face it, it's a tough world out there.
It is a tough world out there. I really hope that some of what we've talked about has already been inspiring some good advice. I think the last thing I would like to say is that bodacious is contagious, just like we've kind of shared here.
It is.
It is an attitude, and it's a decision. And the best thing you can do is, if you want to become a more bodacious woman, is you make the first choice to yourself, and you try some of these behaviors that we've talked about. I've got more in the book, and I share more. I didn't write an encyclopedia. But the point is that it could expand even beyond what I've written. But make a decision to start, and find at least one other woman in your life that you feel would also either is bodacious or would like to be bodacious too. And that's the contagious part. Don't do it alone. It is so much, not only just easier, it's so much more productive, it's so much more enjoyable, and you can almost multiply your efforts when you have at least one other woman who's aspiring in the same way with the same attitude. So no matter what's going on in your life and your career, find at least one woman that you can say, yeah, let's try to be bodacious in our lives and figure it out together.
Well, I'll tell you, I am so inspired today. This has been fantastic. So just tell our listeners where they can find you, your website and some of your social media stuff, and briefly your live programs and seminars they can find out about on your website.
Sure, be happy to. Okay, the hub, so to speak, is at maryfoley.com, which is M-A-R-Y, and then last name Foley is F as in fabulous, O-L-E-Y.com. And actually, on the homepage, there are the links to my Facebook page, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn. So you can go right there, and I'm happy to connect with anyone in that way. Also, you right there will find out about my upcoming live programs. And also, I even offer 30 minutes of mentoring absolutely free to any woman who wants to sign up. And, if it's a really sharp man, I'm happy to talk to him too. But I do focus on helping women become more bodacious in their lives and their careers. So please, I created this website. I've also got a blog and other advice for you to use as a resource. And if we connect on social media, there's other things also that I, share there as well. So please use me as a resource as much as you can.
That's great. So they can find out all this information on your website.
At MaryFoley.com.
Excellent. I'm so happy we had this time today, and it's been such a bodacious experience for me.
Me
it's
too.
Been fabulous. It's been so great. So thank you for listening to The Writer's Voice on Virginia Voice. I'm Jennifer Robbins for The Writer's Voice. Enjoy your day.